Welcome to the 12th Annual Homelessness Marathon, a national dialogue on homelessness and poverty in America. The toll-free number anyone may call for this broadcast is 1-877-NOBODY-8. That's the word nobody followed by the number 8. If you're homeless, formerly homeless, or afraid you're about to be homeless, you may also call 1-866-LEFT-OUT. In the hierarchy of Katrina coverage, New Orleans got the lion's share of attention, Mississippi got most of what was left, and Alabama got next to none. But that hardly means that Alabama wasn't affected. Mobile was flooded, the shrimp fishery was wrecked, and so many buildings were destroyed that 22 counties were declared disaster areas. Alabamans want America to know that they've got rebuilding problems too. We'll talk to some of them right after this.
The largest homeless day shelter in Denver, St. Francis Center, usually sees 600 people a day for food, medical treatment, and job counseling. Since the fall of 2008, however, St. Francis has been helping 800 people a day. But just as the need for shelter, food, and medical treatment reaches a high not seen since the Great Depression, money for health care, emergency housing, and free meals is diminishing. While social service providers and homeless advocates agree that the problem is critical, shrinking resources has meant that the two sides are now more at odds about what needs to be done as opposed to what can be done. Randall Loeb, a formerly homeless man, is now a prominent advocate in Denver. He says there are several differences between grassroots activists for the homeless and professional service providers.
The first problem with the policy making of the officials of government and the providers of services for the people is that they live in a world of bottom lines, of deciding what it is that they want to spend money for and then how they're going to appropriate the very small amounts of resources that they have. When a person is an activist or a person is on the street, it's a matter of survival. When you're working with people who are in that kind of way, you have to make sure that they have a feeling that you just genuinely care about them where they're at, wherever they're at, and however they live, and not to be judgmental or think about the fact that you have some kind of limited resources to give to people.
Randall, what's the difference in how you see the problem and how people who administer the programs see the problem?
For the most part, the people who are working in the capacity as government officials or people who are working in these organizations are trying to protect themselves to make sure that they're safe, that they can continue their business. And it's a business, so therefore they're interested in marketing it. They're interested in preserving their jobs. They're interested in making sure that they can continue to do what they've done. They have to get a certain margin of profit. They have to be able to appeal to their boards. They have to make sure that the public at large sees that what they're doing is safe and okay. When I work with outreach workers, they will provide whatever it is that's necessary for that person to be okay. There's no, like, negotiation about it. And the truth is they don't have to be accountable because they're not connected in that way. So they have an ethics that says that we care for people where they're at, way they are, no matter what.
But Jamie Van Leeuwen, director of Denver's Road Home Project, a 10-year plan to end homelessness, says that while there can be differences between what the activists want and what the service providers can do, they do try to make sure they're ultimately working towards the same goal. Van Leeuwen says that there are particular issues that have caused disagreement, like panhandling.
We don't all agree about this, that the private sector and the homeless activists and the government all had different perspectives on the panhandling issue. And what we did is we found some things that we agreed on. We all agreed that it is much better to have somebody in housing and having a full-time job than it is to have them on the streets begging for money. And we said that the panhandlers should have access to services to be able to get off of the streets. The business community said it's going to be really difficult for us to be able to support a plan when our businesses are being impacted by large numbers of panhandlers in front of our businesses. the homeless providers said, we're not okay with us sending the panhandlers to jail. And so we said, well, what would happen if we made sure that every panhandler had access to services and housing and that we made that available to them?
Despite disagreements between the activists and the service providers, Van Leeuwen acknowledges that both groups must continue to work together.
They're a core piece of what makes Denver's Road Home live, breathe, and succeed. And so Randall's voice, I think, is important when he says, I don't know that we have all the right housing. And the challenge for us as a commission is to get the community to figure out, how are we going to go about resolving that? And we have to figure out, how do we respond to each of these very complex issues in a very strategic way.
Back at the city's largest homeless shelter, however, Randall Loeb said that in his mind, there's no room for compromise on this issue.
It's a human rights, it's a basic quality of life issue, and that's all there is to it.
This is Johanna Gallers in Denver, Colorado.
Hi, everybody, and this is Nobody. Welcome back to the 14th and final hour of the 12th annual Homelessness Marathon. And we got hells a popping here with people on the phone, people with the microphone. A lot of stuff is going on in this last hour, so let's get right into it. On the line, we have Marsha Meeks Kelly, who until really, I think just days ago, was the director of the Mississippi Commission for Volunteer Services. Marsha Meeks Kelly, welcome to the Homelessness Marathon.
Hi, how are you?
Well, I'm still alive, and that's always a good thing at the end of the broadcast.
Good.
This is definitely one of the brightest spots of anything that's happened post-Katrina, is all of the people who came in here to help. How many volunteers came to Mississippi?
You know, the official count that we can document is over 700,000 folks. We know that it's many more than that because there were many organizations, but that was absolutely not the priority to keep count of how many folks were coming in to help. So we actually know over 700,000 folks have come at this point.
Okay, well, that is a remarkable thing. And what provisions was the state of Mississippi able to make? Were you just staying out of the way of these people, or were you able to facilitate it in some way?
Do you know something? That's it's a very difficult thing, and I think we all learned a lot to make sure that that the resources and the accommodations were in place to receive that many people when you were in the middle of a disaster. The situation for Mississippi is we have 82 counties. 75 of those counties were disaster declared, about the size of Great Britain. So we had a large land mass with, and it wasn't easy to kind of put your hands around those borders, if you will, and really be able to check volunteers, you know, as they came through the door and assign them to specific, you know, bunks and now tomorrow is your work order and those kinds of things. So it was quite a learning curve for us. We became unofficial experts in volunteer management.
And what would you say to people who, well, if another state called you up and said, God forbid another state would have anything like this going on, but let's say one did or had some problem, what would you advise them about how to handle a situation like this?
It is very difficult if someone is in some part of the world and they feel very passionate about going to a location to assist, that they are not affiliated with some group, because they bring their perceptions of there's a gas station, there's a bank machine, there are, you know, places for me to get something to eat, and there's places to stay, and none of that is true. You're going into a disaster, so unless you're affiliated with some group, it is really very difficult for the community to be prepared to take you in, because we're dealing with trying to help all of our local people find all of those things. Food and shelter and gasoline.
Right, so you don't need people adding to that. You want people who come in and they are self-sufficient, basically.
That's exactly right. And that's what the affiliation does. If they come in with a group that already knows, okay, we've got these accommodations, we've got these provisions, we know what we're going to do. And not only that, we're organized, we're trained, we're coming in, and we can begin work immediately. That's a different, you know, that's a different set of parameters than somebody who comes. Now, on the other hand, we had it all, and people made it work, and it's because of that our recovery is continuing in a way that perhaps, you know, some of the other states aren't. I really would say that that the warm reception that individuals got here are the reasons that people keep coming back to offer their, you know, to offer the help.
Okay. And what percentage of the volunteers who came would you say were with faith-based groups, and what percentage were with secular groups, if you can distinguish?
Well, we've had over 200 on the ground disaster relief organizations working, and our numbers aren't nearly that high now. They're less than 40 that are still housing and feeding volunteers. But I imagine half to 60% were faith-based organizations, and then other groups.
Well, Marcia, I want to thank you so much for sharing this with us. It's funny because just in this hour that you're in, there's just so many people who want to get in on this discussion that I...
Absolutely. It's important, and you must hear their voices. But if anybody is hearing our voices and they're interested in coming south and they're interested in the passion of helping people recover, volunteermississippi.org is our website, and we'd love to work with anyone.
I'm glad you did that. Gave out that volunteermississippi.org. Thank you so much, Marcia. Thank you very much for participating. Those numbers to call in again are 877-NOBODY-8 or 866-LEFT-OUT. And we have Della Peters on the line. Della Peters? Is Della Peters there? Okay. Somebody's running back to engineering because maybe we're having a little engineering problem there. So I'm going to just... wait a few seconds, and if we don't have Della Peters in a few seconds, we do have Della Peters. Are you there, Della?
Yes, I am.
Oh, okay. And Della, are you? I'm not quite sure who you are. I was just given your name. Are you with a group, or are you from where? Who are you?
I'm Della Peters. I live in Louisiana and okay. Washington Parish.
Oh, okay. Okay. So I see. And you live in rural Louisiana?
Yes, I do.
And, of course, we all know that the only place in Louisiana anybody ever hears about is New Orleans, but you're here to say that people in Louisiana outside of New Orleans have got problems as well.
Yes, we did. It was really bad everywhere in New Orleans, but just about all over Louisiana. We had as much disaster in the rural area as it did in New Orleans. It was really bad all over the state.
Uh-huh. And what is your personal situation, Della?
Well, my personal situation is that I'm currently out of funds, and I'm in personal, I need in the house I was living in was completely destroyed by the storm, and my personal situation now, I'm in process, I need funds, to help get me have my home built, either get me a permanent, another permanent place. I'm now presently living in a FEMA trailer, but that's not permanent, and I need another trailer to live in. I have two sons that's disabled and handicapped, and I need transportation, car to ride and stuff. I don't have the funds and need funds, because I'm permanently living in a FEMA trailer.
Uh-huh. Okay. So, and you've gotten an extension on that FEMA trailer, I take it?
Just a little extension, but I don't know how much longer it'll be. It's about May, I think.
Uh-huh. Okay. Well,
I need another trailer to live in. I need a funds, but I need I don't have the funds to get the trailer.
So you're not getting help in terms of permanent housing. No one's helping you with that.
Not yet.
Not yet. That's your hope, obviously.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
But where you are there no? Is I mean, everybody who's talked to us tonight is saying they're not getting the help they need. So, and you're in rural Louisiana, and no one's coming around saying, "Can we help you get a house?"
Sometimes people come, but I'm still, haven't gotten one yet. Like I said, I'm presently living in a FEMA trailer, but I haven't got me a house yet. I need me another trailer for fun. I have the funds, stuff like that to get me another one. I had to have a house built, and that's a lot of stuff I need. I need transportation and all that.
So you're still rebuilding your life?
Yes, I'm still rebuilding.
Well, Della, I want to thank you very much. We've got a lot of people backed up here wanting to be on the show now. But I can say we all wish you the very best in getting recovered, and thank you very much for sharing your story.
Thank you.
On the phone, we have Martha from East St. Louis. Is Martha still there?
Good morning.
Good morning, Martha. Welcome to the Homelessness Marathon.
Thank you.
What's on your mind this morning, Martha?
Well, I just wanted to share some information and also some thoughts. I've been listening off and on all morning, and I wanted to support the things that were said about the homeless getting Section 8 vouchers and moving into housing, and how, you know, it like leaves them destitute after they've paid the first and last month's rent, and
right.
any pro rent that's owed, any deposits, then they don't have any money for food or for furniture for their apartments, and it's bad, and we really don't have any, you know, social service organizations that can provide financial or other support. So we say we're helping them, but then we're putting them in another type of bind.
Okay. And are you a homeless person yourself? What is your situation?
No, I am not a homeless, nor have I been homeless, thank the Lord.
Yes.
But I am a service provider,
mm-hmm.
and I'm a part of an organization that is starting a supportive housing program for homeless veterans in East St. Louis.
I see.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're here to share with us that these are people who need help as well.
Yes.
All right.
Well, desperately.
Yeah, I'm afraid the needs are just desperate everywhere, so it's just a real shame. But that's the reality of life in the United States today.
Yeah. And then with the change in the economy, it doesn't help us at all.
It's not helping anybody.
Mm-mm.
Martha, I want to thank you very much for the call. I wish I had more time, but I want to wish you the very best with your work and congratulate you on doing it. Those numbers are 877-NOBODY-8 or 866-LEFT-OUT. We have Roberto from L.A. on the phone. Is Roberto there? I'm not hearing Roberto. We don't have Roberto? Okay, I don't know. At the microphone, we have, sir, at the mic, your name?
Yes, my name is Kenneth Rothwell.
Kenneth, and I know you have a story to tell while the other people, we have another group of people sitting around the table and getting mic'd up. Kenneth, tell us your story.
Well, on about July 14th in 2004, I had a 1950s model mobile home on my property over in Hancock County. They annexed us into Waveland after Katrina.
Mm-hmm.
I went to replace my older trailer with a newer trailer. When I pulled the old trailer off the property and put my newer trailer on my land, a county official from the Hancock County Zoning Department came to my property and forced me to remove my trailer from my land.
Now, this was before Katrina.
This was before Katrina.
And so you're saying, as I understand this, your original trailer was grandfathered in, and then they said, well, the new one isn't? Is that what happened?
Right. But I found the zoning ordinance that allowed me to replace my older trailer after Katrina struck.
Okay.
So, in fact, I had the right to do this, but these individuals over in Hancock County that was running the zoning department in 2004 was discriminating against people being able to have affordable housing. Now, this mobile home I had was a perfect replacement for what I had in my next step until I could afford to build a house.
Mm-hmm.
Now, because the trailer was forced to be removed from my property without proper due process of law, when Katrina struck, the trailer was at my business. The trailer was damaged beyond repair by trees that had struck the trailer. Because the trailer wasn't on my land where it rightfully should have been when Katrina struck, me and my wife have been denied all of our federal assistance. We can't get any help from anybody. The only help we received was through my friends, and we tore down a couple houses for the materials in order to build us a structure to have something to live in. Now, this corruption is not just with me. This has happened to many other people who have tried to put mobile homes into Hancock County. What they're trying to do is they're trying to force the people who lived on the coast off the coast and build their concrete jungle and their casinos and their playground for the rich. They paved the road from the Bay Bridge to Ocean Springs, four lanes, moved all the sewer lines and everything, but yet over in Hancock County on the beach that's only 8 miles long, they can't even fix the road yet.
You know, this is something, I mean, your story is an individual story in the sense of, you know, you got caught between this and between that and the other. But the fact of the matter is, even though other people have different stories, we've been hearing all night from people who just fall through the cracks, don't fit in with the bureaucracy, and can't get help because of this or that. And it seems to be almost the norm down here.
Yes. And the denial letter that I got for applying for the grant, I even hired an attorney to file an appeal. Explain to them that our situation. But yet, in fact, they still deny me because my trailer did not sustain flood damage. It sustained wind damage. And there's no program here for the people whose homes have been destroyed by wind damage, not water.
And it's the opposite with the private insurance. They'll do the wind, but not the water.
Correct.
So everybody's just caught six ways upside down. And
well, they find one excuse or another in their paperwork to deny you the money.
They're going to find the reason.
They're going to find a reason not to give you the money.
Well, Kenneth, I wish I had more time, but I want to thank you very much
for
sharing your story and for one more example of somebody who just can't get help because of gosh only knows why, but that's it.
Yes, sir.
Thank you very much, Kenneth. Those numbers to call in again are 877-NOBODY-8 or 866-LEFT-OUT, and I am joined here at the microphone by the Reverend Alex Liddell and his wife, Dana Burton. No, you're not his wife.
No, this is...
Okay. I'm not asking if you two are married. Oh. I'm only getting around with you. But you're Dana Burton, and you're separate from... You're not a couple here.
Correct.
Some couples don't use the same name. But nonetheless, Dana Burton and Reverend Liddell, welcome to the Homelessness Marathon. Yeah,
thank you.
Reverend Liddell, you are in rural Louisiana. And, well, you knew that.
Yeah.
And what are the problems you're facing there in rural Louisiana?
Well, we don't have any shelters for the homeless. We're not even prepared for the homeless there, and it's like primitive, really. No resources. It's very hard, and a lot of the things and other organizations come in. They say they want to get back to pre-Katrina status, but you got to realize you have people before Katrina hit. It was just worse. So they don't know what is really like before Katrina status, because they've been like this all their lives. You know, no help has just been neglect.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just really sad.
When we talk about rural Louisiana, how rural are we talking about?
We talking about primitive.
I mean, do you have a traffic light in your town?
No, we have a caution light.
So you don't even have a traffic light?
No traffic light.
Do you have a store in your town?
We have a grocery store, Kim Sunflower. And we have no activity for the young people. If they wanted to go to the park, or if the parents wanted to take them to a park, they had to go 15 to 20 miles. Either north or south, and that would be either Bogalusa, Louisiana, or Columbia, Mississippi.
Dana, what is your situation?
Well, my situation is that I am a victim of Hurricane Katrina, first of all, and I was living in a home, but right now I live in a dilapidated trailer that is full of mold, and I continue to get sick, and my son continues to get sick, and my daughter we get sick too. I have two children. And each time I go in the trailer, I just get so depressed. And I think about the situation that happened with Hurricane Katrina. I look around me and I continue to see victims of that tragedy that occurred in 2005. I believe it was August 29th.
Yes, that's right. Now, this is not a FEMA trailer. This is your own trailer.
No, I rented from an owner, because the house that I was in, it was affected really bad by Hurricane Katrina, and the trailer was just available, and there was no other housing for me. And because my children were implanted in the school system there in Washington Parish, it was just, you know, I just couldn't move. I couldn't leave the area, and I felt stuck in a way, because at one point I didn't have transportation. It was hard to, you know, catch a ride here or there. There is no transportation system that's, you know, occurring down there. Mm-hmm. So Reverend Liddell is trying to assist me with some type of housing if it ever comes available for us, you know, just to be able to go into the home and feel comfortable. and not feel depressed and not cry.
Well, you're in a bad situation because your health and the health of your children is in jeopardy as long as you stay where you are.
I believe that, and it just doesn't seem like I can get any assistance with that. You know, it's been dire need for a long time, but I just have to deal with what I have to live. The trail in the wintertime is so cold. You can have heat in there, but it's so cold. You freeze. In the summertime, you can have air, but it's so cold. And then when the bills come out, they're so high.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Reverend Lydell, what kind of help can you offer to Dana and others in your community?
Well, we've been working with FEMA. They have a program that they have it on hold. It's called the Mobile Home Donation Program. And I have no reason why it's on hold. I was never explained to it why it's on hold. I heard that at one point in time, they was donating mobile homes to nonprofit organization where the nonprofit organization sets up to donate them to the people that need them. And I have no idea. I'm working on it. I'm talking to people. Just so much red tape and bureaucracy. I remember sitting there watching why help didn't come sooner to Katrina when it happened. Now I done got close enough to see the reason why, because people sits at the table want to know who's going to get it, who's going to get the honor of it, who's going to be responsible, or who's going to get the credit. I'm reminded in the Bible, and I believe it's chapter 9, where Jesus and his disciples are walking past this blind man, and the disciples ask the question, who sinned that this man became blind? And Jesus said his mother nor his father sinned, but Jesus said, I must do the will of my Father so he can be glorified. So we can't be going on. We got people that's hurting. We got people that's out there thinking about committing suicide. I was in a courthouse with a young man, and sitting next to this young lady. She was nervous. That was her first time in court, and she just started a conversation about how she wasn't feeling good, and she never did anything wrong, and she's saying that what she's going through is giving her so much anxiety. She thinks about killing herself sometimes. And I sat there and we talked. I got her number and gave her some information. But you got people down here hurting. And for us to be American, for this to be America, for this to be the example of the world, we're not doing a very good job at home. And I was always trained up and taught, you have to take care of home first. Because how can you take care of the house? And I believe the Bible speaks about that also. But things need to be done. The people need to get on the politician. The politician needs to come together. They need to cut out their agenda, because they didn't get themselves in the office. The people put them there. And we just need to wake up. We need the Gulf Coast, the southeastern Louisiana needs to be reformed economically wise. And if anything is going to be changed, we have to be on our politicians, because they're sitting at the table, seem like they don't know what to do. But we, the people out here that's suffering, that don't have a place, don't really confused, because no one is giving them no answers. So it's just chaos out here.
Those numbers to call in here on the Homelessness Marathon are 877-NOBODY-8 or 866-LEFT-OUT. Reverend Lydell, how many people are in your congregation? I mean, if they all showed up on one day, I know they don't in any congregation, but how many are there roughly altogether?
Well, I'm an associate minister at New Zion in Vonnetto, Louisiana, where I'd say approximately about 75 to 100 on certain days. Then out of Grenada, Mississippi, where I pastor at, that's a little smaller area over there, and it's about come out to about 30, 35 people on a certain Sundays. And really, those people, I see them every Sunday, and they come out there, and they're looking for answers. What they really need is hope, you know, something that can get them a chance to realize that there's light at the end of the tunnel.
Well, what percentage of the people that you see in your congregation would you say are hurting right now?
We have a whole lot of people are hurting. It's about 75%. Matter of fact, this how bad it is. We have a young man that's a client of ours, and he's just not recovering from Katrina. He was homeless, and he has a job, and you know, he works for the city, and it's just so hard when you have to bounce back when insurance is so high. So it's not just the homeless that are hurting. It's people that really have jobs, because it's just so hard. The supplies are going up, and in the rural area, it's just hard to get people out.
Okay. Let me give out those numbers. We have a caller on the line, so let's take a call. Those numbers are 877-NOBODY-8 or 866-LEFT-OUT. And let me see if I can read this name. I'm a little bleary-eyed at this point. We have Marianne from California on the line. Marianne, welcome to the Homelessness Marathon.
Hey, Jeremy. Thank you for the show. You're doing a great job.
Well, thank you. I only got to stay awake for another 25 minutes.
That's true. I wanted to bring up something that was at the very beginning of the marathon, and that is the housing issue. It's been kind of a thread through the whole show. For me, you know, every year when you do this marathon, you prove so many reasons why people are homeless. It's not just because of the stereotype reasons that were given in the media. There's so many different reasons, but when it comes down to it, it's just guaranteeing house for people to live in. It seems like so many of the other problems would be solved if we can just all fight for that. I feel for the nonprofits or the charitable organizations that continue to take up the slack from the government. They find billions of dollars to spend anywhere else, you know, everywhere else, except for the citizens of this country. And there's you just brought up so many issues with this.
Are you a homeless person yourself, Marianne?
No. I mean, I've had my stints of homeless.
You have, but not now. You're in housing now.
I'm in housing, yeah, and I'm working, and that's all good. But I also worked at the county for a while doing AFDC and food stamps for the homeless people, and that killed me after 3 years. My compassion was going out the window. I was making people do things that I didn't even like, I would never want to do, like having to be photographed and fingerprinted just to get food. Poor people come in your office and they sit on the other side of your desk. They're hungry. They'll sign anything just to get me food. And the things that I was implementing were horrible. So I just couldn't take it anymore, so I had to quit. So the burnout rate, is just huge with that.
Yeah, the burnout rate down here is pretty high as well. You know, many years ago, there was a classic movie, The Mouse That Roared, about a country that declared war on the United States, thinking they'd be better off losing a war and getting taken care of by the United States. But the fact of the matter is, it doesn't work that way, because the people in the United States aren't being taken care of themselves.
No, they're not. But it just—that's where, after listening to the marathon year after year, I'm thinking housing. This is the main thing, and I think all of the groups that are working towards homelessness needs to just demand. At this point, we need to demand housing for people. That's right.
Well, I think that's. I think there are. You know, we've had our advocates on, and they would say housing is a right. You know, housing is a right. We should treat it as a right, just like freedom of speech, which is also going out the window. I'm sorry to say, Marianne.
It is. Well, thank you so much for doing this year after year, Jeremy.
Thank you so much, Marianne. Thank you for your support and for the call. Dana, Have you ever thought of declaring war in the United States as a way of maybe getting some help here?
I've never thought of it that way.
How about seceding from the Union? That got a lot of attention the last time the South did that.
Oh, wow.
Maybe Washington Parish could secede?
Well, it's a strong possibility that they would be able to succeed. It's just a matter of everyone having compassion for those who are homeless, those who are victim of circumstances like I am. I consider myself, I have a roof over my head, but it's an unhealthy one. However, through hope mission, through hope within God, I'll be able to survive and live.
Mm-hmm. And do you have any, well, let me give out that number again. It's 877-NOBODY-8 or 866-LEFT-OUT. Do you have any prospect, immediate prospect of getting into better lodging?
Well, again, I mentioned that Hope Mission is one of the aspects of assisting and helping me with housing.
But are they able to get you housing?
Well, they're working on it.
Okay. So you do have some hope at this point. I don't mean to make a pun there. I mean, you really do think they might be able to help you.
Yes, I believe that they are going to help me.
Very good. Well, we certainly hope so. Those numbers, again, are 877-NOBODY-8 or 866-LEFT-OUT. And we have Forrest Eubanks on the line. Forrest, welcome back to the Homelessness Marathon. You were on many hours ago. Feels like a lifetime ago.
Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Forrest. And you want to tell us about the veterans that you work with and what the situation is for veterans here on the Gulf Coast?
Yes, the situation for veterans, as we all know, is very, very difficult. As I sit around, I observe a substantial amount of individuals come through various reasons that they are homeless. I've even known some people that have been homeless for more than 10 or 15 years. And as they wait for income to come in, and one guy I'll just call him Bicycle Man. And everybody knows him. Lives right in this little patch of woods, along with a variety of other homeless veterans and things of that nature that many people already know. Maybe 20, 30, 40 people live in a certain area, and it's their little home, away from home, as you might call it. And it's very difficult, as I sit and I observe a lot of people that might even have a substantial amount of education and things of that nature, and they come in, and they're homeless. Many people assume that it's just because they abuse substances and things of that nature, but that's not really the issue that's on the table with many people's lives.
Mm. And a lot of veterans down here are suffering in the way you're describing, not identically to Bicycle Man, but a lot of them are down here are suffering, veterans.
That is correct, sir.
Have you seen any veterans of Afghanistan or the latest thing in Iraq down here homeless yet?
Well, I hear them come in, and they have a lot of issues that are on the table. But I realize that because in the future that it's going to get worse for them, some of them will eventually end up being out there homeless. A lot of people at this point, you know, they still accept them, and they're even a part of families and being brought in. But at this particular point, as far as percentage-wise, I'm quite sure there are a few. But overall, no, the mass majority of the people that I'm observing that are really homeless are the old-time veterans, the ones that were willing to go in.
From Vietnam and other wars, in other words.
And other wars, yes.
Okay, well, that's it takes time. It takes time, but probably some of these most recent vets are going to fall out onto the streets as well, and we're sorry about that. Forrest, I want to thank you very much for coming back on and filling us in on that. Thank you for participating. Those numbers are 877-NOBODY-8 or 866-LEFT-OUT. We got Roberto on the phone. I'm not sure where you're from, Roberto. Are you there?
Hello, sir. I'm calling from Los Angeles.
Okay, Roberto from Los Angeles. Welcome to the Homelessness Marathon, Roberto.
Thank you very much. I'm glad I got on. I just ran across your show on KPFK down here. And as you know, it's a station for us, the people, the downtrodden, down and out. I'm a homeless person in the Los Angeles area. And the reason I'm calling today is because I had a situation yesterday at the Midnight Mission, which is a homeless type of place where they feed the homeless people and they allow you to camp out there. But as I was coming in yesterday, as usual, to get lunch, there was a slight change. Another gentleman I'd never seen before, who's now in charge, was running this. And apparently there was some racism. He was a black gentleman, very large, and towering over everyone, and basically throwing his weight around. I tape recorded the conversation. It was about 9 minutes of tape recording where there's a lot of arguing. There's a lot of yelling. I'm being told to go back to Mexico. I mean, that type of thing. And, when you talk about homelessness, you have to, separate the races. Believe it or not, in Los Angeles, there's a fight for resources, for dignity, for just the basic necessities of life.
You're saying that there is racism, you feel, from African-Americans towards Hispanics in LA?
Yes. And
what about the other way around?
The size and the agility and the strength of these people, is way beyond the normal Mexican. Mexican's about 5 foot tall down here. And the blacks are about six something. And so they're a lot stronger, a lot more athletic. So, when we're walking down the street, we're forced off the sidewalks. And I'm talking about males, because they like our women. They get along really good with our women. They don't want us, to have any dignity. They treat us like something under their foot. If I could just play you a small snippet of this tape.
No, I can't listen to the tape. We don't have the time for it. But
it's just about 10, 15.
Thank you very much for the call, Roberto. I very much appreciate it. On the line now from Cleveland, we have back the Toxic Reverend. Toxic Reverend, welcome back to the Homelessness Marathon.
Jeremy, thank you so much for doing what you do. Got to help tremendously, just to raise the awareness. One of the things I wanted to touch on was some of the solutions I've come across.
Well, let's do it briefly. We're running out of time.
We got you. There was earthships.net, and they use recycled tires to build earthen walls that are really thick, hold the enthalpy. They're very cheap to heat and cool. They build them cheap. The guy's been doing it for years. It's a pretty good, low-cost, good housing where you can even grow your own food inside for a family of four year-round. It's a pretty good deal. There's also the bale homes where if you put up a pole barn first to keep the weight off the walls and build a what they call a bale home with bales of hay, those are the same thing. They're very good. They're affordable, and they're beautiful homes. There are alternative building solutions that can work very well. And back to in Seattle where they have the mobile tent city that could serve also in an emergency, every neighborhood gets a turn where the NIMBYs don't want it. And they also had a thing for transitional housing called the Aloha Inn. And the Aloha Inn, they had an intake committee. It was run by the homeless themselves. So with the homeless on the intake committee, they kept the trouble homeless out that other homeless don't really want around anyways. And it worked very well, even raised the property values of the neighborhood.
All right. I want to thank you for mentioning those things. And there are a lot of other solutions out there, but I think you'll agree with me that the biggest solution that we need is the national will to solve the problem.
Yeah, I think we need to come together as a community in areas and help each other because our government sure is, and contribute. Opening the lines with Obama, what he's doing, I think we stand a chance we might be able to start getting some of these things put into use more.
It's just got to get better. Let's hope. Thank you very much for the call. Those numbers again are 877-NOBODY-8 or 866-LEFT-OUT. Can a community, Reverend Lydell, can a community solve its problems in isolation without help from the county, the state, the federal government? Can you solve it without that help?
I don't know about solving it, but we can come very close. Just like the gentleman, the last caller just said, we have to start coming together and recognizing that the government is not going to move when we want them to move. But I believe if we come together, recognize the situation that we're in, we can overcome some of our obstacles. Yeah, I believe it very so. But the thing is, we have to realize that we all have something in common. For myself, I used to be homeless. Back in 1988, my son wasn't even six months old. I lost my job. Me and my wife and him, we lived in an abandoned building. And we made do with what we had, but we never gave up. And I thank the good Lord for bringing me this far. And I think that I went through that just because he had ordained this time and now. But like the caller said, we have to come together. We have to start rallying the nonprofit organizations, the neighborhood community organizations.
We just accidentally, I think, dropped a caller. So let me give out those numbers again. 877-NOBODY-8 or 866-LEFT-OUT. 877-NOBODY-8 or 866-LEFT-OUT. Dana, would you be content in life? I mean, obviously we've all got our struggles, but if you could get yourself into... You're not somebody who's a chronic complainer, are you? I mean, if you could get into decent housing and take care of your kids that way, would that satisfy a great deal of what you need in life right now?
I would be very happy if I could. Very, very happy.
You're not just a grouse here, right? In other words,
no.
You got real problems that need to be solved. And I think that's true of most of the people we've talked to, all of the people, really, we've talked to. All right, we've got our caller back, 877-NOBODY-8 or 866-LEFT-OUT, and we have Tommy from Bay St. Louis, Waveland area. Welcome to the Homelessness Marathon, Tommy.
Thank you.
Well, thank you for calling in. What's on your mind?
I'd just like to speak my piece about my situation, and my situation is pretty much 100 or so more over here in Waveland area.
Mm-hmm.
We're in the cottages, and we've been fighting.
That's the MEMA cottages, right? Mississippi Emergency Management Agency cottages, right?
Yes, sir. I own my own property out here. It was used to be county, and then Waveland annexed it. And pre-Katrina, it used to be trailers all out here, out in Shoreline area. After Katrina, it took our trailer, lifted it up in the air, and threw it in the woods. And we stayed in a trailer for almost 2 years. After that, we had the option to get the cottage, and we wanted it because we had nowhere else to live. So we got the cottage, and while we had the cottage, MEMA presented us to us saying, hey, you guys can purchase it. Would you like to purchase it? Sign the piece of paper and we'll work out the deals with you. We signed it. After we signed it, months went by. Then after that, the city of Waveland was, well, we heard that MEMA said that you guys can have the cottages. We don't think so because they're trailers. You know, and this story went on for quite some time.
Well, Tommy, I know that they were eventually judged to be modular homes, but...
That's right.
But you're saying something important here, because you're saying there were trailers there in the first place.
Oh, yeah. And the problem is that these are a lot better than the trailers, and I don't understand why all of a sudden people that work for the city want to change their minds and say no, you know? And what the main problem issue is that I was trying to get to my storyline is that once we were offered by MEMA that, hey, you guys can purchase the cottage, we put everything on hold. Our life was on hold, on pause, on deciding to sign the dotted line on purchasing a house to build or buy a gutted out house and try to fix it up, or move out to the kill, or go somewhere up higher north and buy something else. We were offered the choice to buy the cottage. We were like, hey, you know, why not? If the government's going to give these to us at a good price, why not? So we put everything on pause to decide to go ahead and purchase the cottage, thinking that we would keep it here on the property. We've been fighting with the city. Finally, they say, okay, yeah, you can leave it on your property, but the only way for us to leave it on the property, they're not sure if we can actually keep it on the property until we spend our own money getting an architect to make a plot plan, pull our permits, submit all that paperwork to Waveland for them to go case by case to decide whether...
Did we just lose Tommy? Are you there, Tommy? Okay, I think we just lost Tommy. I'm sorry, Tommy. I don't know what happened there, but once again, we're hearing from somebody who's getting a runaround and getting caught up in the red tape. And I tell you, if you could eat red tape, there'd be nobody going hungry in Mississippi, that's for sure.
Or
Louisiana. Yeah. Well, and you've heard these stories before, Reverend Liddell, I take it.
Yes. And you know, just listening to him, and somewhere down the line with the state and the government and whoever you know, approve these houses, the communication dropped. No one went to that extra mile to explain it or to oversee it, to go through the way it's supposed to went through. Mm-hmm. And majority of the time, that's what it is. It's the lack of communication.
Well, you know, I must say the number one impression I personally have had as an outsider here is that there's nobody running the show. It's like if we were at war, you'd have a general out there saying, bring in the army or bring in the artillery. We need the Air Force over here. And you'd have one objective. And it wouldn't matter that it's the Air Force or the artillery or the this or the that. But down here, there's no central kind of intelligence to it at all. It's like you were trying to fight a war, and the artillery commander, he might be over in another county someplace, and the Air Force might be flying someplace else, and there's nobody in charge. There's no nothing. It's just every organization is out for itself. Everybody is left to fend for themselves. There's no coordination. There's no strategy. That's what I'm seeing down here.
And you're exactly right. That's exactly what it is. Really, if you ask me, no leadership. There's no leadership here. And, you know, looking at the nonprofits and the faith-based, they're trying to do the best that they could with what they have.
Right.
And it's just very hard.
Now, I do want to say, and I say this in a nonpartisan way. I mean, I'm plenty partisan, don't get me wrong, but everybody's got their political opinions, but I'm not really expressing one right now. I'm just saying as a simple matter of fact, we are seeing changes from the Obama administration. We're seeing the beginnings of changes in the policies, extensions on the FEMA trailers, extension on the Gulf Coast coordinator position. I've forgotten the actual exact title. But we are starting to see some change. I think it's too early. Obama hadn't been in office very long, so you know, you can't judge on that. But we are starting to see a change of direction down here, which we don't know how far it'll go, but I would say universally, everybody down here wants to see a change.
Yeah, and I mean, that's what the people are looking for here. You know, they're looking for that little sign of hope. That they're looking for that little mustard seed that the Bible talks about. And once you get that ingredient in, you know, they have a better outlook. They can see the vision. So change. That's good, but we have to be ready for change, and we have to be ready to participate in it. A lot of people don't want to see change, but change is good, and I'm looking just like you, just to see how far you know it goes. You know, it says we're gonna come up to a detour or a bump in the road, but right now. You know, the change is good. It's looking good for the people, and I believe it gives them a little hope. At least they have a better chance than what they done had in the past. And we can't grope on the past, just like that the illustration I gave with Jesus and his disciples. We just got to take care of what's at hand right now.
Well, let me ask you a question, Reverend Lydell, because you are a man of the cloth, and you're not the first we've had on tonight. We've had many. But I haven't asked anybody this because it's a profound question, and I'm not saying there's any easy answer to it. But if God wants a better life for us, God ordained something decent for us, why don't we get it?
Well, it's like this. God, he doesn't call or qualify us. He qualifies the call. And for me saying that, things has been set into motion a long, long time ago. Things that we don't even have control over. And sometimes things coming in our lives to get us aware of it. And sometimes God can be getting our attention and we're not paying attention to it. But looking over the years of my life, like I stated early, I never knew. I was an investment banker at the stock market in the Board of Trade out of Illinois. Never knew that I was going to be laid off because it was always going to be work. So life is not guaranteed, and And but what we try to do, we try to maintain it and keep a consistency. But it's going to be things that come up in our lives that's going to take us off the road, that's going to veer us off the road. And I think we have veered off the road too long to recognize that it was time to get back. Now we realize it's time to get back. We need to do what we need to do, you know, for the country and for our people.
Thank you very much, Reverend Lydell. And I want to thank you, too, Dana, for participating. The marathon is almost over. And I got to say some thank yous. And first, before I can say a single thank you, I got to say a big apology, which is there's no way I can thank everybody. There's no way I can even remember everybody who has helped us down this road for this broadcast. But I certainly want to thank the Mississippi Interfaith Disaster Task Force, the STEPS Coalition, MIMS Carter, and International Relief and Development, Leah Lyman, and Safe Spaces, and also El Pueblo. I want to thank especially Kathleen Johnson of Hancock County Katrina Relief. I want to thank Roberta Avila. I want to thank John Hosey. Like I said, I know I am forgetting people, but I apologize for that. I'm just giving you a brief list here. I want to thank all of our affiliates. I want to thank our funder, who really doesn't actually want a lot of credit, but nonetheless, I want to thank my crew, my son Michael, and Abby and Al, who are both new and who came through great, and Jessica, who's been a rock in our organization. I want to thank Dave Van Allen, our webmaster, who came in also new and has done a great job. I want to thank my wife Ellen, because she is the only one who keeps me sane. And a lot of people question whether she even succeeds at it. But nonetheless, I, too, have a lot of people to thank. And I want to say that that is a reflection on a broader issue, which is none of us does anything alone. And we all need other people. When community breaks down, we break down. So we've heard tonight a great deal about people falling through the cracks, about bureaucracy, about not having a unified vision, about the services, about the help not being there. But ultimately, it does come down to, are we a community? What kind of a society is it that we are trying to create here in the United States of America? It comes down to justice. It comes down to what do we want our country to be? And on top of that, it comes down to whose country is it anyway? This is a democracy. And we, the people, are supposed to have a say in what goes on in our own country. And I think too many of us feel that for too long, it's not the people who's been talking, but the money that's been talking. And we got to have that stop. It's got to be people and their needs that are getting met in this country. One thing that I have said year after year on this is you got to be able to think it before you can do it. And we got to start thinking that we can have a better country, thinking that we can have a better life in this country. And I want to close by saying what I always close the broadcast with. It's a paraphrase from Ben Gurion, and the rain may look tough, but if you don't believe in miracles, you're not a realist. I'm nobody. And thank you very much for listening to the 12th Annual Homelessness Marathon.